We're discussing this morning across the Great Divide, the laws of Machitza. And I apologize for my old-fashioned sources. I will catch up with technology one day. If you've gone to even a few weddings this year, you've probably encountered the following. You may have been at some weddings with mixed seating and mixed dancing. Then you may have been to some weddings with mixed seating and no mixed dancing. You've been to weddings with mixed seating and a machitza for the dancing. Separate seating, completely separate seating, and a machitza for the dancing as well. My own wedding, I remember many years ago, had separate seating and no machitza. So exactly what's going on with all of this? Is there a halachic basis for any of this? And I think that's a little what we're going to try to discover today about where all of this is coming from. And before we begin, we have to really lay the groundwork for this with a discussion of a famous Gemara that's found in Brachos Chaf Daled, and then we're going to see the Shulchan Aruch that follows from that Gemara, and then the Mishnah Brura, that's the commentary on that Shulchan Aruch. So let's begin here. I have here for you a twill. I said I should speak into the mic, so I won't speak into the mic. How's that? A little better? Thank you. Is this better? Okay. Make sure you tell me if it gets worse, okay? Excuse me? Okay? I better not hold it. Okay, I'm going to try not to hold it and we'll see how we do. We're going to come back to this diagram of the Beis HaMikdash that's on the front page. If you go into the inside page, over here, on the bottom, you will see the Gemara from Brachos Chaf Daled. This could be a whole shiur in itself. We're not doing this today. I'm just going to touch on it for a minute. Amar Rav Yitzchak Tefach Be'isha Erva. Rav Yitzchak said that this much, a tefach on a woman, is considered erva, is considered nakedness. If you look at the very end of the Gemara there, it says the last two words, Be'ish To Ulekriyat Shema. What the Gemara is talking about is that if a man has in his presence, even his own wife, if there is this much exposed on her, and we'll find out where, he cannot say Kriyat Shema there. Okay, that's what all of our halachos of tzniyos really emerge from this Gemara. That's what we're not doing today. Okay? If you take a look now, see what the Shulchan Aruch does with this. I have here for you this very interesting edition of the Mishnah Brura that sort of works like the art scroll. It has parts of it highlighted. That's not bad Xeroxing. It has parts of it highlighted. That's the part that they're going to be translating on the other side. Okay? So that's what you're looking at, and it's going to go on to the next page. So Siman Ayin Hei and Aruch Chaim goes like this. Not Tefach Be'isha Erva, but Tefach Miguleh Be'isha. An exposed tefach on a woman, where? B'makom shedarka l'chasota, in a place that she normally covers, afilu hi ishto, even if it's his own wife who he's allowed to see, if you continue the words on the next page, right? Asur l'krod kriyat shema kenegda. You can't read kriyat shema in her presence. So you see that with a few words, the Shulchan Aruch clarified what the Gemara means. Okay? If we take a look on the first page here, take a look at the Mishnah Brura that's highlighted, the Makom Shadarka. Why is this a problem? Mipnei Shezeh Mevi La'adam L'idei Hirur Kishemistakel Bo. Yes. You're right, yeah? First page, Mishnah Brura. Okay? Page number one, Mishnah Brura on the bottom, that's in heavy type. That's how the edition comes. Okay? He says, "Mipnei shezeh mevila adam lidei hirhor kishemistakel bo bichlal ervahi va'asur leprot ola hazkir shum davar shevudusha neged zeh kmo neged erva mamash." Right? Therefore, a man is not, if he looks at a woman who is exposed in places where she should be covered, and there's a big discussion about what that means, that creates certain sexual thoughts. Those are inappropriate for the saying of Kriyat Shema, and therefore a woman who's dressed in this way cannot be in his presence when he's davening, even if it's his own wife. So we're starting to understand now, if you look at this halacha, you begin to understand where we start feeling that there needs to be separation in places of davening, where women would have to be, perhaps in order to maintain the proper decorum, not be standing together with the men. This is the beginning of an understanding of what's happening over here. Okay? If you take... Correct. Absolutely. But when we are in a situation of a Beit Knesset, then we're going to see what happens in a shul with all of this. So, absolutely, the men should either be walking away, but what happens when we have an established Makom Tefillah? What do we do with it then? So let's take a look. We're on page number 4. Page number 4. Okay. If you then go into these other sources in the Mishnah, we're going to start to see what happened in the Beis HaMikdash itself. And all of the laws that we're going to see about Mechitza in Shul come from Simchas Torah. From Simchat Beit HaShoeva, what we have left of that today is Simchas Torah. And the same kind of problems that we have now with Simchas Torah, is it holiness or is it like a social scene? Like, what's the deal with Simchas Torah and the problems that we have in different communities? Nothing has changed. This is what was going on in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. So let's take a look at the Mishnah in Sukkah, and it says the following. Excuse me? The Simchat Beit HaShoeva is a celebration that was taking place during that time. I believe it was because there was a Nisuch HaMayim. That's where the name comes from. Yes, because it's about the karbanos. They were pouring water on the mizbeach instead of wine. I don't have the pasuk for you, but I can find it for you. Okay? So the Mishnah says the following. Mishlo ra'a simchat beit hashoeva, lo ra'a simcha miyamav. If you never saw the simcha that took place in the Beit HaMikdash during the holiday of Sukkot, after the of Motzei, the first day of Yom Tov, you've never seen simcha in your life. What did they used to do? Motzei Yom Tov Rishon Shachag, Yerdu le'Ezrat Nashim, u'mitaknim sha tikun gadol. They would go to the Ezrat Nashim. I hate to make you flip back, but if you take a look and see what the Beit HaMikdash looked like, look at the outer court. You see the big area called the outer court on the bottom with the four little offices in the corner, and those offices had no ceilings. Right? And this was in a court. If you see the outer court, what does it say in parentheses? Women's hall. That's the Ezrat Nashim. It was really the all-purpose room of the Beit HaMikdash. It was the outer court. People would arrive there together. There were also sometimes gatherings there, formal gatherings. But the Ezrat Nashim was a place where everybody was able to go. You see the very narrow Azara where it says Israelites Hall? That's the Azara where the Karbanot were brought. Do you see how narrow it is? Women were able to go there to bring their own Karbanot. The Ezrat Nashim is the name of this place where everybody gathered. Okay? Excuse me? Men and women were able to be in this place. Excuse me? Oh, so we're going to see. We'll see what happens. Okay? What was the great tikkun? The Gemara says the following, if we're reading on. My tikkun gadol. What was this great thing that they amended in the Ezrat Nashim? Amar Rabbi Elazar, pa'otosha shaninu, Chalaka hayata b'rishona, v'hekifuha gezustra, v'hekinu shi'hum ha'shim yoshivot milamala v'anashim milamata. Originally, the walls of this courtyard were smooth. And what they did was, during the time of Simchat Beit HaShoeva, according to this view, there were things that were extending off the wall, and they would put planks on those little boards, those little brackets that were sticking out of the walls, and those boards became a balcony for the women during Simchat Beit HaShoeva, so that the women would go upstairs during this wonderful ceremony where the great chazal were dancing, and the men would be downstairs. But look what happened. What happened originally was not that. Tana Rabbanan, our rabbis taught us, Barishona, hayu nashim mi bifnim, va'anashim mi bachutz, va'hayu ba'im lidei kalut rosh. Simchas Torah. That's not what they had at the beginning. At the beginning, what they did was the following. They had the men stand outside the courtyard. The rabbis were inside dancing. The women were inside. The men were outside. And what did they find happen? Too much socializing. Let's try it the other way. We're going to put the men inside, we'll put the women on the outside. Too much socializing. So what they established was is that the men would be downstairs and watch the ceremony, and the women would be upstairs on this balcony. Okay, now, what we're going to see here, take a look. We have a very, very interesting problem that's going to come out of all of this. Go to the next page, page 5. We need a very important pasuk here from Zechariah, and I have the whole selection from Zechariah, but it's enough for us to see it from the Yerushalmi. We're going to have a very serious problem that hopefully this pasuk in Zechariah will help us solve. What we're going to understand is that the rules for the Beis HaMikdash were all written out already. And how the Beis HaMikdash was supposed to be established is really considered a diorita, even though we have some of these measurements found in the Nevi'im. These rules for how the Beis HaMikdash was supposed to be built were not able to be changed. So what are we talking about the fact that they like added a balcony? That's usur. You were not allowed to start doing construction inside the Beis HaMikdash. It had to be the way it was established. Take a look at the Yerushalmi, and then we're going to go to the Moshe Feinstein and see what happens. Mimi lamdu. The Yerushalmi says, where did they learn to do this? That why they had it separated? Midvar Torah. The Zavda Haaretz Mishpachot, Mishpachot Levad, Mishpachot Beit David Levad, Unishehem Levad. We have a pasuk from Zechariah that's talking about the end of days. Chad Omar, what is this hesped that's going on at the end of days that Zechariah is talking about? Zeh is pedo shel Mashiach. One said this is the hesped of Mashiach. Okay, the first Mashiach. Mashiach ben Yosef will die. V'churna Omar, zeh is pedo shel Yetzahara. No. It's the hesped, it's the funeral of the Yetzahara. There's going to be a time when we won't have a Yetzahara anymore, and there's a hesped for the Yetzahara, because you know those bad inclinations that we had also serve as ambition for us, help us to accomplish other things in our life. Man da'amai zeh hespedo shel Mashiach. Ma'im v'sha'ah sheheim aveilim at amar ha'anashim b'fnei atzman v'hanashim b'fnei atzman. So the one who says it's the hesped of Mashiach says, if at a time when there's avelus, when there's mourning, we say that the women and the men have to be separated, so how much more so do we have to have a mechitza at a time when it's a time of simcha, like the Simchas Beis HaShoeva? Man da'amar zeh hespedo shel Yetzahara. For the one who says this is the hesped at the end of days, the mic just went off. Who's ever in charge, but I can talk loud. Okay? Whoever says that this hesped is for the end of the Yetzahara, ma'im bisha'ashe ein Yetzahara kayam at amar ha'anashim b'fnei atzman v'hanashim b'fnei atzman. If at a time when there's no Yetzahara, we say that the men and the women have to sit separately, bisha'ashe Yetzahara kayam lo kol shekein. So when there's a Yetzahara that's in existence nowadays, of course we have to sit separately. Okay, so look at this Yerushalmi and the quote from Zechariah, and go to the next page where we have some rare translations of Rav Moshe Feinstein's Tshuvos in English. I think what we're going to do is, I want to talk about all the halachot, and then maybe we'll talk, understand the psychology behind it, and then we'll talk about it, because we're talking about two different things here. The halacha stands on its own, as we're going to see in a moment. The halacha stands on its own. Once we start looking for the reasons behind it, that's where we start to get, you know, if it applies here and it doesn't apply over there, and that's where we're running into issues. So we first have to establish, you know, what's the bottom line, what's the halacha, and then we can have a discussion about what's behind it. Okay? Let's see what's there. Rav Moshe says the following. I'm going to tell you later where this comes from. It's really a mind-boggling place where this all comes from. If you take a look here, go to the second page. Rav Moshe says the following. The basic rule is that even if men are on one side and women on the other, it is still forbidden for them to be without a mechitza. And this would seem to be a biblical injunction. We're talking about a Beit HaKnesset now. The proof lies in Sukkah 51a, which we just spoke about the balcony that was erected in the women's court of the temple for the eve of the second day of the Sukkot festival, so that the women would be relegated to the upper level and the men to the lower to watch from there the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. And the question is raised, but it is written that David said to Solomon about the temple plans, all this is in writing. As the Lord hath made me wise by his hand upon me, even all the works of this pattern, this is from Divrei HaYamim, that it was forbidden to add anything to the structure of the temple and the courts. Rav replied that they, the sages, came across a verse in scripture in Zechariah, the one that we just quoted, signifying that it was necessary to have a separation between men and women, right? And Rashi talks about it there. Quite obviously, the import of the reply is that with the verse they found, it's as if the projecting balcony had been explicitly ordained, and there was thus no need to have God HaRoeh and Natan HaNavi transmit this matter when they gave instruction about the working plans. Now, had the balcony been required only by a rabbinic prescription, it would be impossible to say that a rabbinic law could override the biblical dictum that all this, the temple plans, were in writing, and hence were not to be modified. And in Chulin 83, the Talmud makes it quite clear that this is Scripture's ruling. Therefore, if a balcony was required to separate the men from the women, that too must have been by biblical law. Rav Moshe Paskins, that the fact that in Zechariah it talks about this Avelis taking place separately, men separate and women separately, that is our text that indicates that for sure in the Beis HaMikdash, when there would be major gatherings, either of tefillah, which sometimes the Ezras Nashim was used for, or for sure for Simchas Beis HaShoeva, this separation, A, had to exist d'oraisa, and B, the balcony that they erected was not some added construction, but something that was already included and foreseen in the original plans, even though perhaps originally they thought they could do without a balcony and just have them separated. Nevertheless, since it was ushered to add it, we're sort of learning l'mafreya retroactively that had to exist. We're learning it from Zechariah. How could it be a d'oraisa if it's in Zechariah? So what they say is, Zechariah is not teaching us the halacha, but Zechariah is reporting on what already existed in his time. The Navi is reporting, and what we're seeing is that historically that men and women, when there were large gatherings, were separated. And therefore, we understand that since Zechariah is merely reporting that this is what it was, this is must have been what it was from the time of the Torah. He's not adding anything new. This is the reasoning that Chazal add. I want to make very, very clear to everybody that everybody, all our posts can maintain that the concept of a mechitza, of separation of men and women, In our Migdash Ma'at, which imitates the Beis HaMikdash, is Deoraita. The only disagreement there is the actual wall that separates us Deoraita. According to Rav Moshe, as you see here, the wall itself is Deoraita. Because if there was something constructed in the Beis HaMikdash, and that would not have been allowed unless it was already part of the plans. So a constructed thing, either a balcony or a wall, is Deoraita. The only difference we see, if you go to the end, and I'm sorry to make you go further, but you'll see something that looks very similar to it, except it's from Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik maintained that it, 14 it says on it. On the upper right. What? I can't tell you, but I would imagine there would have been. That's what we're saying here. So he's saying, although I'm going to bring you up to date though, okay? What Rav Soloveitchik also maintained that separation in the Beit HaMikdash and in our Mikdash Ma'ad is Deoraita. He was back and forth in terms of the actual wall, the actual balcony itself, but separation in the Beit HaMikdash and in the Beit HaKnesset Deoraita. Look at the second paragraph on side two. These are very important words. They created great controversy a number of years ago. I do hereby reiterate the statement I have made on numerous occasions, both in writing and orally, and this is a statement that was made, I believe, in the 1950s, that a synagogue with mixed seating arrangements forfeits its sanctity and its halachic status of Mikdash Ma'at and is unfit for prayer and avodah shebelev. With full cognizance of the implications of such a halachic decision, I would still advise every Orthodox Jew to forego tefillah b'tzibur even on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur rather than enter a synagogue with mixed pews, notwithstanding the fact that the officiating rabbi happens to be a graduate of a great and venerable yeshiva. You can only imagine what's going on. No rabbi, however great in scholarship and moral integrity, has the authority to endorse, legalize, or even apologetically explain this basic deviation. Any rabbi or scholar who attempts to sanction this desecrated synagogue ipso facto casts doubt on his own moral right to function as a teacher or a spiritual leader in the traditional sense of the word. Rav Soloveitchik. Pretty serious. Okay. I have reason to believe, which I will note soon, that this was in the 1950s, which I'll tell you why in a minute, why that's dating from there. Yes. That was for the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, right. Right. Correct. How we do it? What's the structure? How do we pull it off? Okay? And again, across the board, there's absolutely no disagreement. Everybody maintains that it's Deoraita. The only question is the actual structure. Is the structure Deoraita? Rav Feinstein says the actual structure is Deoraita. Otherwise, you couldn't have had it in the Beis HaMikdash. The Rav maintained that the separation is Deoraita. Perhaps the structure is rabbinic. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. Chas v'chalila, we're not in a position to say don't do it, but you see what a powerful statement he made. It, you know, sort of have this notion of the Rav, but it speaks for itself. Yes. Excuse me? This is in the Migdash. Yeah, we're going further. We have to start with the basics and then we're going to move further. Yes. It would seem to me from everything that I've done, because it was not large gatherings, it was yichidim. Do you see how small the azara was? It was not a place where you could have a large gathering. So as individual people brought their karbanot, they brought their karban individually. The azara where the karban was brought, look at how tiny it is. It was not designed for large gatherings. It would seem to me, right? That's the azara as opposed to for the kohanim. Okay? How we doing? Good so far? Okay. All right. What I want to bring us forward a little bit in terms of the mechisa in shul, because we then have to go to our other situations. What we want to look at now on page 7, okay, look at now on page 7 is what was the purpose of the mechitza? What was the purpose of the mechitza? I'm good. Thank you. Okay. The purpose of the mechitza. We're going to see there's nothing is simple. Okay? The Rambam in Hilchot Lulav and in his laws on the Beit HaBechira, page 7, Hilchot Beit HaBechira, page 7. Number 1, the Rambam, Hilchot Lulav. The Ketzad Hayu Osim, he's addressing our Machitza. Erev Yom Tov HaRishon Hayu Mitaknim BaMikdash Makom L'Nashim L'Mala V'Anashim Milamata. And I took this, instead of out of the Rambam, out of Rav Ellenson's work, so he highlighted it for us. Kidei shelo yitarvu elu im elu, that they should not mingle, they shouldn't mix. The same thing he says in the Beit HaBechira, that there should not be mingling. Take a look at the Rambam in his Perish LaMishnah in Sukkah Perek Hei. Tikun gadol. There was a great amendment that was made. What do I mean? Gadol, that it had a great purpose. Gadol ha-towelet. V'hu, shahayu mechinim makom l'nashim u'makom gadur la'anashim, a place for the women and a separate place aside for the men. U'makom ha-nashim l'ma'ala, the women were on top. Al-makom ha-anashim gavoha mimenu, this balcony. Kidei shelo yistaklu. Anashim b'nashim. This is the Rambam himself. Conflict in the Rambam that the men should not stare at the women. They should not be visible. And the Tosfos Yom Tov on the bottom says, again, he goes with the Rambam. Perish HaRambam k'dei shelo yistaklu anashim b'nashim v'hadin imo. Histaklut anashim b'nashim mevi lidei kalut rosh kol shepein b'chatzrot bein Hashem. This staring of men at women brings to this frivolous behavior and certainly inappropriate in the courtyards of God in the Beit HaMikdash. What happens? Rav Moshe comes to the rescue. How does Rav Moshe Feinstein ameliorate this contradiction that's in the Rambam himself? Okay. What Rav Moshe is going to say, I'll tell you first, and then we'll look at it inside, is Rav Moshe says, no, a mechitza is only about not mingling. It's not about not seeing. Rav Moshe, we'll see it inside, so you don't have to trust me, right? It's only about not mingling, and the kind of staring that the Rambam was talking about was the kind of staring that would bring to mingling. Okay, so let's see what he says. Let's take a look at Rav Moshe on page 8. I'm in the second paragraph, the second full paragraph. I'm going to skip the beginning. I'll tell you what it's about. Count down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, that arrow was good. I'm glad I put it in there. I couldn't tell if it was my arrow or the Xerox one. Okay? The first one Rav Moshe is saying, very importantly, look at this balcony. Do you see there's an overhang? You see that men can sit underneath the balcony? So the question, says Rav Moshe, is this a balcony that's solid to the floor, no men sitting under it? Or is it an overhang? It makes a difference. If the balcony overhangs, then the men under it can't see the women. If it's solid to the floor, the way it is over there, then the men who are here can see the women. Okay? Rav Moshe concludes, against other sources, that he thinks the balcony was not what I described, little brackets sticking out and then boards put on top of it. Rav Moshe feels that it was solid. That it was solid, and therefore the men who were here would actually be able to see the women. Now let's see where my arrow is. U'muchrachim lomar shekavanato v'peirusho l'sukha l'histaklut kazot shiyichola lahavi lidei kalut rosh. He's talking about that kind of staring that could bring about frivolous behavior. Shehu rak kisha omdot hanashim lamata v'lo mechitza o af b'mechitza nimucha shehein kimu'uravin. He thinks that the kind of staring that could bring to frivolous behavior would be when they're on the same level, right, without a mechitza, or when the mechitza is very, very low. V'katav zeh machmat shesover shahistaklut media l'kalut rosh k'mo shekatav hatosfot yom tov v'amnam histaklut ha'anashim v'nashim media l'idei kalut rosh, right? Avol al kol panim rav ki efshar lavo mizeh l'kalut rosh shayach l'esar. The only time you have to forbid this kind of separation is when that closeness, they're standing on the same level, can bring about this kind of inappropriate social behavior. Kishahein lamala, but if they're on top in a balcony, af below machitza. If they're on top, even without a wall. Ulamata, but, and if they're on the same level, the machitza givoka, arachar haktefayim. If they're on the same level, but with a high machitza, past the shoulders, she'ein shayach l'chush l'kalut rosh, that you could not have frivolous behavior with that kind of mechitza, lo'ich patlan b'his taklut, af l'harambam, b'perishol l'sukkah. Even the Rambam doesn't care that they see each other, because where do we see the Rambam? What was the Rambam's first statement? That he was concerned about mixing, about mingling. Va'afim nistapek b'kavanoto b'perishol l'dina, Ein lanu elamasha katuv harambam bihilchotav perakei mibeit habechira halachatet shuhu kidei shelo yehei mu'urbevin v'chein beperachet milulav halacha yibeit shekatav kidei shelo yitarvu elu im elu. What did he mean? You have to see that the main purpose of the Rambam was is that they shouldn't mingle, and he was talking about the kind of staring that would bring to mingling, right? V'gamosha v'yartu shebelo mechitza gavoha Yechashvu kimu'urbevin, without a high mechitza, that's considered mingling. Kevin shaba in mizeh l'kalut rosh, because that could bring about frivolous behavior. Avol mitzad mistaklut atzma ein mafush. But in terms of being able to see the women, no problem. No problem if the women can be seen, as long as the mechitza is constructed in such a way that you could not have free mingling of the men and women. Just turn the page for a second. I have it all in English. I have to say that I lost my energy, you know, in hunting and finding the Hebrew in the Igros Moshe. I have it, right? But it's here for you in the English. It's very, very important, and we're going to find something fascinating, even according to Rav Moshe. So this is a very nice page. It's all English. The back of the page we just read. Because of its height, a women's balcony satisfies the need for a partition, even if the women remain visible. Yet, because women wear sleeveless garments, a curtain must be added to conceal their arms from view. If possible, the curtain should be high enough to conceal their hair as well. Very famous tshuvos on Rav Moshe about hair covering that come out of his tshuvos on the pizza. Yet synagogues with balconies are not careful to install a curtain, and I can only imagine that it's because the pious members have despaired of anyone listening to them in this regard. There, the God-fearing must turn their faces aside when in prayer. So as Moshe says, this is fine as long as the women are properly dressed. But what happened to our opening Gemara of Tefach B'Isha Erva, B'Ish To'ul Kriyat Shema? What happens if we have a shul constructed in such a way that we have a perfectly fine mechitza in terms of not mingling, but the women are visible to the men while they're davening, and they are dressed in such a way that halachically constitutes a problem for the saying of Kriyat Shema and Dvarim Shebedusha? Then what? So Rav Moshe, many of these tshuvos come out of the 1950s and the early 1960s, and it was 100% the case. So Rav Moshe says that's not appropriate. If the women are not dressed properly and they are in full view of the men, you need a better mechitza. What's the irony, folks? In the communities where everybody is dressed like this, like this, like this, everything perfect, we don't have a shayla. I've gotten in these shuls, so the mechitza is up to the ceiling or a hole in the floor, right? I've done that. I've gotten in shuls, right? That, in the shuls where the women, Baruch Hashem, are coming to shul and they're davening and we're so happy that they're there, but maybe they're not so careful about how they're dressed. So then the mechitzas are like, okay, maybe yes, maybe no, maybe they're facing each other, maybe they're not facing each other, right? They're not mingling. Fascinating. I mean, that's just a sociological study. If anybody wants to discuss that sociologically, that's up for grabs. But you realize that all of us have, we're all in, so he says, the halacha, Rav Moshe says, you could daven in a shul like that, but if you're a man and you're in the presence, if the way the shul is constructed, it's, you can easily see women whose hair is not covered or who are not dressed properly, you should either turn to the side or look inside, okay? Keep your head in your sitter. If you can't, b'dieved, if he holds, it's okay. But l'chatchila, that's not the way to go, right? Very, very interesting, right? Fascinating in terms of the separation in the shul and where it, in terms of the other halachos, with Kriyat Shema. Before we go to other situations, how are we doing on time? Good. Okay, before we go to other situations, I just want to, we read that Tshuva and English from Rav Moshe, we read the one from Rabbi Feinstein. I want to show you this volume. It's fascinating. Anybody ever hear of this, the Sanctuary of Synagogue? This is the third edition. And the third edition has extra things in it, like when Rabbi Riskin started his shul, which originally Lincoln Square Synagogue did not have a machitza, and he was given the permission, I think, by the Rav to go there as long as he would have a machitza within a certain amount of time. So those things are in here. See that in here? The older editions, the first and second edition, have things that are not in here. Okay, so you really almost need both. But this emerges, this is the third edition, and it emerges out of a fascinating lawsuit that took place in 1955, which is where we read these tshuvos from. This is really a legal brief. In a shul in Mount Clemens, Michigan, the neighborhood had changed, and the kehila was voting to take away the machitza. And the Orthodox members who were left sued them. Think you have machlokas in your community, right? They sued them because they were being deprived of property rights. They were, the original founders of the shul were Orthodox, whatever, 100 years before, and now they had no place to daven. So they were being deprived of their place to daven. This became a legal suit. The original round of cases, the kehila, the people who did not want the machitza said that the judge should not rule, and he, because it was a religious issue, but then they appealed it, and the Supreme Court of Michigan ruled that the machitza has to stand. The way they did it was by garnering all these letters, opinions of Rav Soloveitchik, of Rav Moshe, and many, many, many others to indicate that one could not daven in a shul, an Orthodox Jew could not daven in a shul without a machitza. So essentially what you're seeing here is the legal brief. There are even some of the writings of the attorneys in here over this case. Ultimately, he won. This Baruch Litvin, who was one of the members of the shul, they won. Okay, they won the battle. They lost the war in the big picture because the neighborhood changed so much that there were no Orthodox Jews there to make the case anymore. But they won the bigger battle in the end, because in gathering all these sources and all these writings in 1955, 56, 57, when this country was going through, Orthodoxy was going through a terrible decline, and the feeling was the only way to make it grow was to sort of yield the halacha, they made a very powerful case for machitza, that an Orthodox shul had to have a machitza, and if it didn't have a machitza, it did not meet the standard of an Orthodox shul. So it's a very powerful event in American Jewish history. Yes? Okay, so the korbanot are individuals, right, things that were brought, but when we have large gatherings, and I'll show you some of the articles that are available, when there were large gatherings of Jews, and that's why they had this thing about men inside, women outside, and vice versa, when there were large gatherings for either Simchat Beit HaShoeva or for Tefillah, which sometimes the Ezrat Nashim was used for, it was always separated. The question was what to do with this massive crowd at Simchat Beit HaShoeva, that it was not enough to just have this separation, but that it required something even further in terms of not mingling. Right, but that's not, those were individuals. Again, look at what the Azara looks like. Those are individuals coming up in a place that doesn't have a lot of room. The Ezrat Nashim was a place for large gatherings. And when there were large gatherings, there was separation. I will just point you to these following articles. What did I drop here? Okay. I have to tell you, I had a panic attack. I just came back from Israel, and I was looking for my articles, and now I'm going to have another one. What the heck? Here it is. Moment Magazine, December 1989. Very hard to find in the library now. I think you have to subscribe if you want to get these now, but I have them. Two great articles, one by Larry Schiffman, Dr. Lauren Schiffman, who's going to be the new vice provost here, undergraduate studies, when men and women sat together in American Orthodox synagogues, that describes a little bit of the Mount Clemens issue and the history of Machitza. And an article on archaeology by Bernadette Newton on whether there were actual archaeological findings of machitzas in ancient Mikdashei Ma'at, okay, where there is a big historical discussion of all of this, and the feeling was is that for tefillah and gatherings, they were separate, and that's where they had this idea of putting the men inside and the women outside. That was not a new idea then. That was what they were practicing during times of tefillah. We're going to talk about family in a minute, okay? I'm saying the bringing of the korbanot is not what's characteristic here of large gatherings of people. So I'm not sure we can learn from the bringing of korbanot to what we're talking about here. Yes? Yes. Right. Okay, we're coming. It's coming. Here we go. All right? So, what I want to look at now are these other situations. Not shul. What happens when we're not in shul? I think the shul situation is very, very clear. So, if you take a look here, and I'm looking at time, but I'm going to show you without reading inside, on page 10, you have writings from the Maharam Ship, from the 19th century, who was a student of the Chatam Sofer. You have writings even from Rav Eliezer Waldman, who is known as the great posek of Shari Tzedek Hospital, who had certain very liberal understandings. You should know there was a great war between Rav Eliezer Waldman and Rav Moshe Feinstein on abortion. And Rav Eliezer Waldman was incredibly lenient. He had cases where you could do an abortion up to the 7th month. Okay, and Rav Moshe went ballistic. And yet here, you'll see that he's quoting those people in terms of machitza and high and not being seen. And that whole tradition of not messing with that at all, he's very much to the right on that. Some people think that emerges from Hungary at a time when they were fighting reform and not to change anything in terms of the Beit HaKnesset, even if halachically it was permissible. Okay? That's what's on page 10. What I want to look at now are some other situations. What happens when we have just, you know, gatherings, lectures, etc.? So I will point you to one of my favorite poskim, and here he is on page 12. Okay, and then we'll talk about Sheva Brachos on page 12 on the bottom. I gave you four columns of the Sri Be'ez. And believe it or not, that's just a drop of a very large tshuva. And I gave it to you not because it has to do with mechitza. It's a tshuva that has to do with mixed youth groups in post-World War II France. That's just amazing. It's just beautiful. Page 12 and 13. We're looking at page 12. So, but we're just going to do the part that's underlined here. What happens when we have other things? Lectures. So he says, only in shul do we have to have a big mechitza. We don't want women to be visible because of davening. Because it's a problem of inappropriately being exposed during this time. Which I had at the beginning. All in the Gemara that I gave you. What about gatherings, lectures? When we have the ceremony. Right? We have speeches, right? The Sri Be'ez is writing in the 1960s. They never had mechitzas for those kinds of things. They were only careful that men and women should not sit together. They shouldn't mingle. It shouldn't become a social event. They said that on Shabbos you're allowed to bring in a mechitza. You can move the furniture and bring in a mechitza if the Rav is giving a drasha. Let's say the Shabbos HaGadol drasha. So in the room, and you could bring in a mechitza even on Shabbos. Mashma sa'asu mechitza gam b'sha'at drasha. It seems that they used to make a mechitza even for a speech. Not only for davening kriyat shema, v'ner'eh shezu midat chasidut v'lo mitzad haden. V'halacha, you don't need a mechitza for speeches. U'me'elam lo ro'ina bi'artzot lita u'polon shidakiku v'zeh. We never saw in Lithuania, Poland, that they would make a mechitza just for a speech. Okay? I'm going to tell you very interestingly on this note that I remember it's coming up again soon, the Siyam Hashas. And I remember I was in Nassau Coliseum for the last Siyam Hashas. There was separate seating, separate sections for men and women. When they were going to daven mincha, mysteriously, miraculously, these curtains came out so that everybody could daven mincha. They turned it into a little shul, and it's also probably a big hakpada because if it's a makom arayah, if it's just a temporary place, like you're in the airport, you don't have to make a mechitza. Notice there are no mechitzas in the airport or in the airplane. Okay, but they did. They were very careful, and they made a mechitza come out. And as soon as the davening was over, this was run by Agudas Yisrael, the mechitzas went away. The curtains went away. You have a separate seating, but there were no mechitzas. Okay, what happens now with other things? Sheva Brachos. Right? You have here writings from the time of the 12th century through the 19th century. On page 11, right before, facing the page that we just did. For the purpose of time, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, time of Germany, the time of the Tosfos, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, who wrote the Sefer Chassidim, said that you cannot say Sheva Brachos if there's mixed seating at a Sheva Brachos. That we should rejoice as in a place of trembling, Aval im lo keach adam isha she'enahu ganav, he's marrying an improper woman, I don't know what that means. Oh, ki lo kachab isha enahu hagun, she's marrying somebody who's not proper. Oh, she'shneim enahu ganim. Oh, im ein tarbutsham, there's no culture there, it's not refined. She'yesh nibul pebeneihem, there's inappropriate language. Oh, she'hanashim yoshvot bein ha'anashim, it's mixed seating. She'hu harim sham, lo yitafein libarei she'hasim chavim ha'ono. You cannot say that bracha. Kol mitzvah haba'ava avera ayada mutav shelo ye'asah mitzvah. Mitzvah haba'ava avera, if the mitzvah you do as you're sinning, it's better not to do it at all. Mo, the mitzvah of sameach hatan v'kala. The Bach, from the 16th century in Krakow, says, we have a minhag not to say shahasimcha b'ma'ona, but he says on the second line, v'lo matzati tamo minhag b'amza. I don't know where it's coming from. This is in the sitting, Elefisha, Su'udazot Tanahi, Mishivim and Shimon Hashim Yachai, Bechedr Achad, Bekatuv Bimin Hagim, She'ein Mevarchim, She'atzim Chabim Ma'ono, B'makam She'esh Hashash, Shal Hiragir. Maybe it's coming because there's mixed seating. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Rav Gansfried in Hungary in the 19th century, you can imagine, is to the right. No mixed seating at Sheva Brachos. Rav Mordechai Yaffe, the Levush Hachor in the 16th century, this is who we want. Ein Nizharin Bazeh Achshav. 16th century. We're not careful with this anymore. The Efshar Mishum She'Achshav Morgalot Hanashim Harbeh Bein Hanashim. Because now in the modern 16th century, men and women are found together all the time. The Ein Kan Hirhor Aveira Kalcha. What's the Hirhor Aveira? I mean, you're in the store together, you're in the streets together. What's the big deal? Meirov Hergalan Beinein of a Kevin Dadashi Dashi. What's the big deal? They don't think, so what? So you see, where it's coming from that the men and women would sit separately at this little Sheva Brachos gathering, and you see where many of us would sit together, right? That people felt it's artificial. Men and women are together all the time, even in Lindsberg, even on Lee Avenue, people in the stores back and forth all the time. But all of a sudden now when you're having a Sheva Brachos, now I have to worry about it. Right? Doesn't make sense. I want to end with the final, before I end with the last source with Moshe. It's the next to the last page. The last page is just the source he quotes from Flemish. Very last page. Yeah, the last page says 16, this is 15, it doesn't have a number on it. Igros Moshe goes across the top. I think what I'm going to do is let me summarize it outside because the hour is late. I want to respect everybody's time. It's fascinating. I'll start at the beginning so that you can see where he's going. Ubimakom kibbutz ledivrei harishut. Just optional gatherings. Va'af b'chatunot. And at weddings. Misubkani in yesh ha'isur zeh va'ofen shalecha chashash yichud. V'yoter notesh shalecha le'isur zeh. Dehaashkechan ba'achilat ha'pesach shahayu ochlim ha'anashim ba'anashim bevayet echad v'hayu sham kama mishpachot she'ein lecha kol pesach u'pesach shelo nimnu alav yoter mi'asara kedi'ita b'psachim da'af samach dalet. Okay. He said, it seems to me at gatherings like weddings and other things you can sit together, you don't need a machitza. Proof: for the eating of the Korban Pesach, that was a family affair, but often not just one family. You had to be able to finish up the whole Korban Pesach as a big animal. So you had to, sometimes we gathered our neighbors, the extended family. There were many people sitting there together, and he goes on to say in here, you couldn't separate them. You couldn't have the women separated with the slaves. They said that was inappropriate, have the women and the slaves together. Therefore, we understand that the women were sitting together with the men from these families. Not an issue. So we learn from Korban Pesach that people at these kinds of like Su'udot Mitzvah, and this is the biggest Su'udat Mitzvah, it's a Su'udat Mitzvah D'Oraita, the eating of the Korban Pesach, that it was the Yuchayev to sit together as a family, that there was no separation. The last four lines, But in the Beis HaKnesses, he says, time of davening, it's asur, midyoraita tzarir shekiyem achitza shal yudchet tfachem, which is, I don't know, my husband's, you know, million shulas of Rav Moshe on machitza. So I think, I don't know, 63 inches, that's over 5 feet tall. Right? Yudchet tfachem beinehim, ashu hanashim lamala va'anashim lamasim kubiyat, or the men have to be on the bottom and the women on top. But at a family gathering, a meal, a chatana, he does not have a problem with it. Okay, let's bring it forward now. What's going on in our own worlds? I have here the extra one that I have for you. I just couldn't resist giving it to you because it's a footnote of Rav Ellenson. I have the English and the Hebrew, and again, I don't want to belabor it, but Rav Ellenson says the following. When you're sitting together at a wedding, there's no problem of sitting without a machitza, of men and women sitting together. On the other hand, he says, Rav Ellenson, who unfortunately was killed quite a number of years ago in a car accident, in a biking accident in a lot, and I remember meeting him at Stern College in the Kotch Auditorium, smooth shaven, definitely more of the Yeshiva University camp. Rav Ellenson said, but the smorgasbord, and everybody standing together to watch the dancing at the end, he said, that's a problem. That point of mingling together, it's better you should have a machitza at the smorgasbord and sit together. When you're sitting together at the meal, everybody's sitting shashkil, there's no mingling, it's everybody at the table, there's a hook. Really, it's inconsistent. The smorgasbord should maybe have separate. Rav Ellenson, this is right out of Rav Ellenson, you can read it. There's only one place I went where I saw that, I davened, I probably should have said it in a recording, but I'm okay. I davened in Rav David Cohn Shul one Shabbos, Bul Yavetz. It's my friend's son's bar mitzvah, and I was there for Shabbos. So what they have there at the Kiddush, no machitza, but the Kiddush is set up on a very wide table, mirror image. And there's no machitza, but the women just sort of on their own naturally gravitate to one side of the table, and the men gravitate to the other side of the Kiddush table, mirror image food setup. After that, we all went to sit down, and Rav David Cohn himself was part of the meal, sitting there at a mixed table, a Shabbos meal table, Sudas Mitzvah and Shabbos with everybody else. That was very consistent with what we're learning. Being consistent is a very, very difficult thing. Let's look at some of our weddings now. So, now we have a lot of going on in our YU family of mixed seating and the machitza, because the girls are uncomfortable, and probably rightfully so, with the dancing, that they want to be able to dance and let loose, and they should not be seen. On the other hand, if you have men sitting on that side, and they're sitting there eating whatever they're eating, and the dancing is going on. I've been to some weddings where they actually set up some sort of light covering around the tables on the girls' side of the dancing so that the women's dancing was not as visible to the men who were sitting at that side at their mixed tables. Okay? You may not love the way it looks, but halachically it's rather consistent. I've been to some weddings like that even in my own community, and it's a trick to do it in a way that it doesn't look like you're in a box dancing. But that's rather consistent to do that. So sitting together, but you know, then if you're going to go stand, if the men are going to come stand and look at the girls dancing, that's a problem. Sometimes we have young women who are dancing in front of the chasam kala. That's interesting. Okay, I'll let you think about that one. All right, now, let's take a look. Let's sum it up, okay? I want to go back to Pesach and to see what Rav Moshe was talking about in terms of deriving these halachot at other occasions from Pesach. You look around, I think we're living in very, very difficult times. You know, there wasn't as much hakpada, carefulness with the halacha in the 1950s and 60s, but then again, we weren't living in such a sewer in the 1950s and 60s, so we have interesting things going on. It's very, very difficult. When we talk about machitza, we're living in a time when there are really no barriers at all. And unfortunately, even in our own Orthodox world, there are many, many problems with regard to no barriers. And I think that, you know, some of the separation issues and machitza that we have, at weddings or in other places, for sure, probably comes from, you know, my chumra is bigger than your chumra kind of thinking, right? And look what I'm doing. On the other hand, a lot of it is coming from a very good and a very sincere place. And I think from the sources, what we've done, you can see where some of it is coming from halachically. I think it's very important for us, even as we're thrashing through these issues, to have respect for communities that want to be a little more strict than maybe we're comfortable with, for the young people at our own yeshiva university who are trying their best to be meticulous with their observance of these halachos. And they are struggling with issues as young people that I think we did not have to struggle with. And I think if we look around at the young people here, they would validate that. And so we really want very much to respect their carefulness with the halacha. Go back to Korban Pesach. Why was the Korban Pesach supposed to be eaten as a family in the first place? So in a long time ago, in a discussion that I had with my husband, he said the following. The night of Machas Bechoros, when we said there wasn't a house She'ein Shem made among the Egyptians, that's because there was so much promiscuity among the Egyptians that we said, this one was a Bechor, this one was a firstborn to this mother, this was a Bechor to this father. We didn't even know what was going on. The family barriers were so broken down that there were Bechoros all over the place and people weren't aware of it. It was a terribly promiscuous society. The Korban Pesach was supposed to be the tikkun for that. The Korban Pesach was a celebration of the wholeness of the integrity of the Jewish family. And that's why it was eaten, not separated, but dafka, as a family, mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers together as a unit, celebrating that beautiful unit. So, I think that one way to keep our families whole and stable and to avoid to some degree the terrible promiscuity that plagues our society is by adhering more to the letter and the spirit of the halachot that we outlined. We should think about it carefully and understand where it's coming from. It's not coming from a place of denigrating women. On the contrary, it's coming from a place of respecting women and making sure that they're not viewed in any way other than respectfully. And I hope that in the chus that we're able to continue to know when to separate and where to separate, we will be able to maintain the wholeness and togetherness of our families and of Klal Yisrael. Thank you.